of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. I will open a hearing on SB 5522, the Oregon Health Sciences University. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a lot of people signed up to testify today. We have 2 hours in which to take testimony. Because of that, those constraints, we're going to limit the time frame to 2 minutes each. So, Mr. Bender, will you give the explanation of how we're going to...
In order to help you realize how much time you've used up, when you have 30 seconds remaining, I'll just lift this yellow card here, and when there are 5 seconds left, the red card. So we please ask you to keep in your time frame.
Okay. And I would also like to note that there is overflow seating available in room H170, which is just down the hall here. Okay, we will start off with Dr. Neil Boost. And we'll actually bring three people up, Kevin Grant and David Anderson. Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Dr. Neil Buist. I'm a concerned citizen, professor emeritus at OHSU. I address the possible loss of the genetic services at CDRC exclusively in this address, and I've given you a summary of the statements on which this is predicated. I'd start by pointing out that 3% of all births have a genetic diagnosis, some of which require urgent therapy, and it's for this reason that we work with a seamless system at the state public health lab in the newborn screening system, so that there is a collaboration there that we provide follow-up and treatment. However, looking at the committee, 60% of you already have your genetic diseases eating at your bodies, and it will predicate the way that some of you demise. Of these disorders, something like 300 are already well known, but there are 8,000 genetic traits. Many of them occur only one in a million. But if you have 1,000 genetic abnormalities, each one of which occurs one in a million, it means that one in 1,000 of your population has got a one in a million disorder. You have to remember this because these rare things are not easily taken care of by physicians in the community. They're too rare. It's so unusual to have genetic specialists, of whom in the state 90% are contained at OHSU, the clinical genetic specialists. This is not like cardiologists and other specialists around the state. You have superb services scattered around. Genetics is concentrated in CDRC. The tools that we use are not the darlings of insurance companies, but more valuable than the cut of a surgeon's knife. And if you can't cure these disorders, ask the families whether it's worthwhile finding them. Loss of the genetic services would remove the only full program in the state. Seattle, San Francisco, Fresno, and Denver are the next closest programs, and would destroy one of the crown jewels in the diadem of the health services of Oregon.
Kevin Grant, please.
Good morning, Chair Devlin and members of the committee. My name is Kevin Grant, for the record. I'm the Director of State Affairs at ASOSU, the Associated Students of Oregon State University, and also a board member of the Oregon Student Association. We represent students in the OUS, Oregon University System, Lane Community College, and for the purposes of today, the OHSU. OHSU is the only fully functional hospital and university in the state. They help today's patients while also preparing tomorrow's nurses, doctors, dentists, scientists, as you know. I just want to mention the governor's recommended budget would severely cut this university. It would severely reduce the operations of the hospital. Students will suffer. The students at the School of Nursing are said to have their tuition raised by 50% over the next couple of years, at least 50%. This could cause OHSU to become a private university when out-of-state and in-state tuition are effectively the same. This will not only hurt nurses, but also potential doctors, scientists. 88% of all OHSU graduates stay within Oregon, making it one of the biggest producers of our healthcare workforce in Oregon. And for the general health and welfare of the state, I'm urging the legislature to please reinvest in OHSU by reversing the cuts made in the governor's budget with $32.8 million. This is enough just to bring it up to 0305 levels. I just want to mention that though I'm an OUS student, I am a student first and foremost, and so I'm looking out for the students here at OHSU. And I understand that I understand the necessity of investing in this university and to its mission of providing high-quality health care for Oregonians and training the next generation of OSU students. 30 seconds left. I want to mention real quick, my mother is actually, she's actually in her mid-50s, and she's a registered nursing assistant down in the Mid-Valley Hospital. And she works 12-hour days at near minimum wage. And she does not get the respect and the compensation that she deserves. And it's her dream, though she's in her mid-50s, to one day become a nurse. And I think the OHSU is something that she can look at. But right now, she's not going to get there. That's why we're asking for your help in Senate Bill 5522 by restoring the cuts made in the governor's budget. Thank you.
Mr. Anderson.
My name is David Anderson. I'm 65 years old. I do have NF, as you can see, very visible. When I was born with NF, not much was known about it. It was a disease or a genetic disorder that was rare and unknown for the most part. I had some of the classic signs, such as Cafe Olé spots, and they were just called birthmarks. Nothing was known about the possibility of having disabilities or concentration problems or so on as you're growing up. And the visible bumps or neuromas were something that just sort of happened. My parents were not informed of any of the potential effects or things that could happen to someone who had NF. That's something that did affect me my whole life. I had problems in school, mainly with concentration, and that was labeled to be behavioral problems rather than anything else. As I grew up, and as my the neuromas or bumps started to become more visible, I started having problems socially. My self-esteem was diminished, and it helped. It hurt me quite a bit, I think. My wife, when I married my first wife, we were not aware of the fact that we should have genetic counseling. Fortunately, my son, who was born when I was 27, did not inherit the disease. I think that the NF clinic is really important. I think that this genetic counseling is needed. I think parents need to not only be aware of the possibility, but also what can be done and some of the impacts of the disease.
Thank you very much. I would ask that the audience refrain from clapping, because actually if you clap after each speaker, we're not going to get to all the people that are signed up. David Dull, Lyle Stumpf, and Winter Stumpf. And then on deck will be Tony Wing, Eric Scott, and Michelle Warmer will be the next three up.
We found, Mr. Chair, what worked in Medford was clapping in American Sign Language. It gives people a chance to...
please proceed.
Good morning. My name is David Dull. I did not come to you as an expert, but I come to you as a father and a grandfather. And I want to speak on behalf of my grandson, Ryan Austin Dull. PKU is a disease that is devastating if untreated. However, this disease can be controlled with simple medical foods combined with a guidance and support on how to monitor a child's specific needs and then precisely administer the exact amount of necessary medical foods. This is not a simple process like following a recipe for making cookies where a little extra butter or a little extra chocolate makes them better. These measurements need to be exact, within a few grams. And they can fluctuate from week to week as the child grows older or conditions change, such as a child has a common cold. All of this weighs on the minds of young parents. In July of 2003, my grandson Austin Dahl was born, the first native Oregonian in our family. Through Oregon's double testing, he was diagnosed with PKU, and with him parents, his family was sent to the metabolic clinic at OSHU, where they receive support and education on how to care for their son's very specific nutritional needs, and ever since. Without this support, their son, and anyone affected with this disorder, faces the real possibility of a lifetime of severe mental retardation. However, with the support and education provided by the Metabolic Clinic, their son will lead a perfectly normal life where he can contribute to society versus being cared for by it. As a father and grandfather, my support will never waver from my family. It's the moral thing to do. It's also the prudent thing to do. I ask that you show your support for the CDRC Metabolic Clinic and the hundreds of Oregonians that count on it on a daily basis, as it is also the moral and prudent course for the state of Oregon. What you choose today is not whether you will support these children. It's whether you will support them with education today or you will support them with social services for the rest of their lives.
Hi, I'm Winter, and I'm a member of the CDRC clinic. This is my son, Colby. He also has PKU. And, you know, we are brand new to the clinic, and we are still at the very scared part of just finding out about this disease with our son. Without this clinic, we'd have to move. We'd have to totally relocate. We don't have it. You know, our child can't go without insurance because he needs his food, and he has to have his medical food to survive. We are just really hoping that people will understand and realize how important that it is that our children have this care. And if we take the budget cuts, they won't get the care that they get now. And our children are in desperate need of it. And we, you know, we're just parents, and we just want to see our babies have a chance.
My name is Lyle Stump. I'm the father of Colby. I have a great job. I provide for the family. And if this clinic is closed down, me and most of these people here are going to have to relocate, which means less revenue for the state. And I personally love the Northwest. I'm from Minnesota, but I want to stay here. And I just beg you, please, keep this clinic open. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Tony Wing, Eric Scott, and Michelle Warmer. And then the next up after that will be Janet and Tyler Reimers and Ellen Lowe.
Who would you like to go first?
My name is Tony Wong, and I'm here to express the urgency for the Children's Developmental and Rehabilitation Center, the CDRC, to remain open. The consequence of closing this predominant children's clinic is to sequester these children into another type of institution, resulting to inadequate and crucial care throughout their lifetime. CDRC is a prominent purveyor of both medical and nutritional guidance and provider for these helpless lives. And this is not just a temporary provision of life-sustaining needs. These children must adapt to their individual dietary changes as they grow and develop. This center provides them with that right to a normal and healthy life. Who knows, perhaps Colby would someday like to become a senator or maybe even president. The repercussions for non-treatment or improper treatment for PKU would severely impact our community in the long run, as we would pay more dollars into perhaps mental institutions, hospitalization, and care for the neurologically impaired. A PKU baby improperly treated could become autistic, and one with proper treatment could be a normal, healthy, and productive citizen for our state of Oregon. Thank you very much.
My name is Michelle Wormer, and I'm the mother of four children and wife of Sergeant First Class Dwight E. Wormer, who is currently stationed in Iraq. I'm writing this letter to express my deepest concern for the closure of this Child Developmental Rehabilitation Center at Dornbecker's Children's Hospital. As a mother receiving the best possible care for my children when they are sick, is of the utmost importance. Dornbecker's Children's Hospital has given my son that care when he had an appendectomy. The value of keeping the Children Developmental Rehabilitation Center open is absolutely as important as all of the other clinics at Dornbecker. If this clinic loses the funding needed and the doors close, not only will the children who have established a trust with their caregivers have to lose a part of their security, but they will also have to relocate. The children with PKU disease will undoubtedly be the most affected. Their families will either have to drive hundreds of miles to each appointment or move away from their families and loved ones, as well as find new jobs, relocate, and again have their lives dramatically changed. The research being done at the CDRC has the promise of new hope for all these children and their families. Please do what you know and your heart is right, and please pass the bill for necessary funding to keep this valuable clinic open. Thank you.
My name is Eric Scott, and I'm a concerned parent, grandfather, and I've worked with the severe and profound. A little story here. I worked with a child that was severe, profound. Mom would send him to school. School would send him home. And this went on for a while, and after I had left the school, and nobody wanted to seem to care for that child. The child got a cold, pneumonia, ended up getting a staph infection, and ended up dying at OHSU because nobody wanted to step in the gap and say, we will take care of it. And I'm asking you to step in a gap, put the money up, and take care of the children.
Janet and Tyler Reimers and Ellen Lowe. And then next up will be Mindy Voigt, April Hamid, and Martha Moore.
Hi, my name is Tyler Reimers, and I'm 17 years old. I live in Hillsboro, and I'm a senior in high school. I am here to ask for your support for the Oregon Health and Sciences University and the Child Development and Research Center. I have methylmalonic acidemia, which is a very rare and life-threatening metabolic disorder. The staff at the CDRC has taken care of me since I was 6 months old and first diagnosed. When I go to the CDRC for a visit, I see my doctor who specializes in metabolic disorders, and I see the dietitian that I have seen my whole life. They help me with my special low-protein diet, do special blood tests to monitor me, and they also have a special food room that stocks special low-protein food to help me with my diet. I have lived a very normal life thanks to the CDRC. Without the care I have received, my life would not be the same. I will be 18 years old this summer, and on my last visit, I asked the doctor where I would get my care from when I am an adult, and he told me that there are no adult specialists for my disorder in Oregon, so I would continue my care with the CDRC. If there is no CDRC, I will have to go to another state to get care. I know that the state of Oregon started screening newborns for my disorder a year ago, October, and it seems to me that a state that saw the importance of screening won't be able to provide the care that those newborns will need.
Good morning. My name is Janet Reimers, and I'm the mother of Tyler, who has methylmalonic acidemia. We've been told that due to budget cuts to OHSU, it is very likely that the CDRC will have to be closed. Tyler has gotten his care from the metabolic clinic that is part of the CDRC all his life. He was diagnosed when he went into a coma when he was 6 months old. His disorder is very rare and life-threatening. Without proper care, he would die. We have been very lucky to reside so close to OHSU and have been able to give Tyler the best, very best in care. Tyler's condition is so rare that most doctors in the private sector have only an elementary level of knowledge about MMA. So this is why we need to have the doctors at the CDRC available for Tyler's care and available for education of medical students and residents at OHSU. There is no doctor in the private sector in Oregon that has the knowledge or willingness to take care of someone with a disorder like this. Without the CDRC, we may be forced to get care out of state. A couple of years ago, we supported the newborn screening program that Tyler talked about which now includes methylmalonic acidemia. It is our hope that with screening the children that are diagnosed in the future with MMA, they will be able to get care from day one and avoid many of the medical issues that children like Tyler have to go through, that they've had to go through in the past. I am sorry that a state that saw the importance of newborn screening for this disorder and also prioritizes this disorder on their list of covered diagnoses for Oregon Health Plan does not see that supporting the facility that cares for these children is in the best interest of the state. How will a child covered by the Oregon Health Plan get care? If there is no CDRC, it seems that it will have to be out-of-state care, and who is going to pay for that? The current budget cuts facing OHSU will affect many lives. My son Tyler and his life are dependent on the CDRC. It is crucial to keep the CDRC for Oregonians. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Ellen Lowe, and I appear today with two citizen roles at OHSU. I'm a member of the Community Advisory Council for the Center for Ethics and Healthcare, also serve as chair of the Oregon Opportunity Task Force, a body created by the legislature to monitor the Oregon Opportunity so the core mission of our university would not be lost as the effort to advance medical research moves forward. I do believe the capacity of the university to maintain this balance is compromised by the level of public support proposed by the governor's budget. My most important contact with OHSU has been in a third area, and that's as member of the Health Services Commission. For example, there's always been direct involvement by OHSU. Dr. Paul Kirk served as our chair during those difficult negotiations with the feds early on. And now the current chair is Dr. Eric Walsh, and another member is Dr. Sam Saha. These three have given thousands of unpaid hours to improve the health status of their fellow Oregonians. And many of their colleagues likewise have participated. We could not have done it without their involvement. I should add that the delivery of a number of those most important services have also been dependent on the presence of OHSU in our state. Dornbecker and the CDRC are there for the Oregon Health Plan population. They're also there for all of us. There's also the clinics at Richmond and Scappoose that are serving the uninsured. Maintaining the schools of dentistry, medicine, and nursing with competitive tuition is critical to responding to the workforce shortage. In my task force role, I have come to see the relationship, the interdependence of the medical research and teaching functions at the university. I ask you to bring healing to the OHSU budget. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all. Mindy Point, April, Martha Moore. Then next up after that will be Jamie Sorensen, Dave Rahan, and Russell Shapiro.
Good morning. My name is Martha Moore, and I'm here with my son, Spencer. He's back there. Spencer's 13 and has spina bifida. We've gone to the CDRC since 24 hours old. We've gone to the CDRC from when we lived here in Oregon and when we lived in Holland. We would travel twice a year to have his appointments. For us, it's his baseline care. It's his support system, his friends, and the people he can ask any question he needs to. For Spencer, it's teenagerness and finding a place to find out what's next for him. So I would urge you to reinvest in the CDRC. He's a kid that needs the help. He's a kid that uses it every day and is here to support. I've also been asked to read a statement by Dr. Michelle Nario-Redmond, who couldn't be here this morning. She's writing as a parent and researcher who's extremely concerned about the future of leading a multidisciplinary spina bifida clinic in the country. We moved to this area in 2001 from Ohio in large part because of the comprehensive and longitudinal state-of-the-art care provided by the specialists at OHSU's Child Development and Rehabilitation Center. We have not been disappointed. I've had the opportunity to compare our clinic with similar clinics in Kansas City, Chicago, Cleveland, and felt confident knowing that my daughter's multi-system physical, neurological, and social issues are fully addressed by a team of collaborators who provide the kind of coordinated effort that is needed to manage Sierra's disability and health conditions that take away, that takes all of her interconnected systems into account. Sierra is 9 years old. She uses a wheelchair and a walker for mobility and has a VP shunt in her brain and receives a learning support to accommodate her concentration, memory, writing needs, and secondary to her neurological condition. The Spina Bifida Clinic at the CDRC allows for kids from childhood through adolescence and adulthood and incorporates friendly, centered approaches to address these complicated concerns. We would be lost without this team of experts and my own abilities to contribute meaningfully as a social psychologist and disability studies researcher would be compromised as well. That's Michelle Nario Redmond.
Good morning. I'm Mindy Voigt, and I'm a nursing student at the OHSU School of Nursing in LeGrand. I grew up in Prairie City, Oregon, which is located in Grant County. Grant County covers an area of 4,500 square miles and has only one hospital to serve all of its communities. The vast majority of the communities in Grant County lack any sort of clinic or any other health services and rely on volunteer ambulance crews to transport their members to the hospital in the case of an emergency. This is true for most parts of eastern Oregon, and increasing the availability of health care depends on maintaining programs such as the OHSU School of Nursing in LeGrand and its Rural Frontier Delivery Program. Nursing education is vital to my community as well as to many of the other rural communities. It provides us with well-educated and highly skilled nurses who have an interest in providing health care to the rural regions of our state. Rising tuition will be severely detrimental to my personal education. I spend a lot of my free time studying and going over the notes from lecture and going over the material that's going to be covered the next week, because the way I think is that someday somebody's life is going to rely on my knowledge about those processes. So it's my duty not only to myself but to them to learn as much as I possibly can. Rising tuition will force me to work rather than spend that extra time studying. In the long run, I won't be able to gain as many benefits from my education. Nurses are the foundation of a strong healthcare system, and the rural areas are desperately in need of the leadership that they have to offer. Unfortunately, rising tuition will inhibit the ability of many rural students to attend school at all, and for those who do attend, it will decrease the quality of their education. Everybody is entitled to maintain and receive the best education and the best treatment possible. And OHSU and LeGrand provides those students in rural areas with an opportunity to give that compassionate and competent care that everybody needs.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is April Hamid, and I'm a friend of a patient that's treated at the CDRC. You've already met him. It's little baby Colby, who's 4 months old. His mother, Winter, has described to me how she has to distance herself when she takes his blood test every night because his crying, she can't. It's hard to hear your baby cry, but to know you have to follow through with those tests. Every drop of his formula has to be measured going in. If he spits it up, it has to be measured coming out. This is hard now, she told me, but can you imagine having a toddler who wants to have something else to eat or wants to have more food but cannot have it because of their numbers, or is not wanting to eat anything at all, especially the stuff that's created for them that may or may not taste as good as chocolate pudding or something else that little kids like to eat? If the CDRC is closed, these families will have to leave to find new clinics. They'll have to find new jobs, get new insurance if they're lucky enough to get it, and leave the support of family, friends, their churches, and their local communities. Most of all, if the CDRC is closed, the children will suffer the most. Without proper treatment and monitoring, Colby and the others with PKU will suffer higher odds of severe retardation, autistic behavior, tremors, and more. And those are for just the PKU children that are at the CDRC.
On the 30th of March, Governor Kulikowski gave remarks on education funding for grades K through 12. He stated that the time has come to change the debate and open a new dialogue about what education means for our children and what we need to provide so they can be successful and contribute to our society. We need to talk about raising the bar so our students have the skills they need to compete in a global economy, an economy driven by innovation and technology, and an economy that values community. And I could not agree more with that quote. All children deserve the best education and tools available to achieve the greatest success that they can. That is why I believe that keeping the CDRC open and running at 100% is so important. But let us think ahead 10 to 20 years with both scenarios. On the one hand, if the CDRC is closed,
Please conclude.
Oh, I'm sorry. I totally missed that. Okay. If you keep the CDRC open, it'll be a wonderful moment for everybody and those future children born with any metabolic disorders. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you all.
Sorry.
Jamie Sorensen, Dave Rahan, and Russell Shapiro. And next up after that will be Dr. Michelle Norio, Dean Westwood, and Aaron Schneider. Let's try again. Let's have 2 out of 3.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes. My name is Jamie Sorensen. I'm an AFSCME member for Local 328. We're 4,000 members strong. And we very much support the House proposal for restoring the budget to OHSU. The only problem is it leaves out CDRC. We have 3,300 patients that we serve in all 36 counties. CDRC is critical for OHSU for continuing to serve these patients. So, thank you.
Yes.
Chairman Devlin, members of the committee, my name is Russell Shapiro. I'm from Klamath Falls, Oregon. The city of Klamath Falls serves the mental health needs of Klamath and Lake counties and bordering Northern California rural areas. The National Health Service Corps has identified this area as underserved as to its primary mental health services. At the time that I wrote this, there were 4 psychiatrists practicing in our area. I come now to find that there are 3. Currently, I am the sole advanced practice mental health nursing care provider for an offender population in Klamath County. I'm employed by Klamath County Corrections and have contact with mentally ill offenders in the jail through the probation department, the courts, the community, the police agencies, and the community at large. Over the recent years, I've come to know that the care needs for these mentally ill in this rural area exceed the necessary resources. I do not possess the training or the expertise necessary to provide primary mental health services. Mental health treatment and management must be referred to those providers that possess the required skill set. As this rural location is underserved, I often have no provider to provide resources, or I have no provider to refer these persons to. As you may know, the mentally ill are often incarcerated when available treatment is unavailable or inadequate. The tragic consequence is the criminalization of the offender's mental health illness. For some time, I had entertained the idea of returning to school with a plan to become an advanced practice psychiatric nurse providing primary mental health services in my rural location. The problem was that such a program was not available in Oregon. For many years, I have been preparing to return to school to become a primary mental health provider in a rural location. Not until the availability of a distance education program at OHSU did I truly become motivated about applying. Without such a program option, I would have had to leave Klamath Falls to achieve my educational goals. Simply stated, I and many others...
Mr. Shapiro, could you please conclude?
Yes. I think I would recommend for the committee to sustain the budget for graduate distance education efforts for OHSU.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, do we have Mr. Shapiro's testimony?
Mr. Shapiro, did you submit your written testimony?
Yes, I did.
Thank you.
A second call for Dave Rahan. Is there a Dave Rahan in the audience? Apparently not.
The next parties up are Dr. Michelle Norio, Dean Westwood, and Aaron Schneider. And then we will have Brett Gourley, Sterling Card, and Abel Ahamada Ali.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I believe Mr. Rahan is not in the audience right now, but the information submitted from Oregon AFSCME, he is a constituent of mine and also represents AFSCME, and I think this is from him.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Dean Westwood, and I am with the Child Development and Rehabilitation Center. Just want to share briefly with you why I believe we should support the House's bill to restore funding to OHSU, but more germanely for my purpose here, to fully restore funding to the CDRC. At age 17, I broke my neck in a diving accident, which was a pretty life-altering experience. OHSU's intensive care unit and the staff there on three different occasions saved my life, thus impacting not only my ability to live and thrive, but also my family and extended family through Portland and Pendleton. After convalescing or recovering through OHSU, spent the next few years doing what young adults do when they don't have much other to do, which is get in trouble. I am a third-generation Oregonian. I have spent my entire life either in Portland or in Pendleton off Bridal Drive, bucking hay and driving a combine back when the combines weren't air-conditioned. I've had a most unique path to where I'm at now, and OHSU has played a very key role in that, specifically the CDRC. After my spinal cord injury, I did start to pursue my higher education after high school, have attended universities and colleges throughout Oregon, but eventually ended up at the CDRC, where I was fostered and facilitated as an individual with leadership potential. I used the staff fee privilege to acquire my master's degree, with which I would not have been able to acquire. I used the leadership, the mentorship, the tutoring that I received at the CDRC to move forward into a position where I'm now the co-director, interim co-director of the Center on Self-Determination. I have moved from being on SSI, SSDI, to bring into federal grants and federal grant dollars as a researcher. I would strongly encourage you and would hope that you would see the efficacy of restoring full funding to the CDRC. Thank you.
Please proceed.
Good morning, Senator Devlin and members of the committee. My name is Aaron Schneider. I'm a native Oregonian. I've gone to school here all of my life. I am here this morning on behalf of a group of medical students who are deeply concerned about the state of healthcare in Oregon. Some of us are from Oregon, some are not. All of us want to see access to health care in Oregon maintained at least its current level. We want to stay here to practice medicine, and your investment in us is an investment in Oregon's future. It's our concern that by raising tuition for qualified Oregon nursing, medical, and dental students, these students will be forced to consider matriculating elsewhere. Most public universities in other states will be more affordable to them than their home state of Oregon as an in-state student. We're also here to speak for a group of patients who can't speak for themselves. As student physicians, we have been taught the value of advocating for our patients, especially the ones that are disadvantaged and un- or underinsured. Those patients are not here today, and we're here for them. The indigent patients that OHSU will not be able to treat if these cuts go through are not here, but that doesn't mean that they don't exist. The state will save no money by taking away the funding for these patients to get the basic care that they need to keep them alive and healthy. They're going to end up elsewhere, and they're going to take up social dollars. So making an investment to pay for them now and to restore our funding is a good investment in Oregon's future. I'd like to thank the House of Representatives for their proposed restoration of most of the cuts, and I encourage the Senate to do so also. My colleagues are to follow. Thank you.
Was there a Dr. Michelle Norio? Second call.
I don't believe she's here.
Okay.
She was spoken for.
Okay. Thank you. Brett Gourley, Shirley Card, and Abel Ahamada Ali.
Good morning, Chair, Senators, Representatives. Senator Gourley, our names are quite similar, so I've enjoyed hearing that over the passing days. My name is Brett Gourley, and I'm a native of Salt Lake City, Utah, and I have come to Oregon for medical school. During my 2 years here so far, I've been able to experience quite a few things, mostly in the rural aspects of the state. This last summer, I did a research project which involved the northeastern corner of the state. In Enterprise, during my time there, I heard a business plan by the Winding Waters Clinic to implement residents and students to keep the clinic in the black. The Winding Waters Clinic is the main provider for Enterprise and Joseph. When I went to Elgin and Union, both nurse practitioner clinics, I heard similar plans to keep the nursing practitioner students and the nursing students integral to that clinic to keep it in the black. Students, medical, dental, and nursing have an important aspect in the health care of Oregonians in the rural state and in the metropolitan area. Last term, I did a rotation in the emergency room where we saw many patients, probably 60% of which did not have any access to insurance. 20% did have insurance. The other 10% paid out of their own pocket. OHSU doesn't receive any reimbursement except for the state and a few grants. So it is important for the state to continue funding OHSU so they can continue to have the student funding and indigent care funding that they've had previously and continue that into the future. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Sterling Card, just in case you check that. Abel Amlada is not able to attend this morning. She has to be with his son this morning, so I apologize for his lack of attendance. I'm a junior dental student at OHSU. And I grew up in Troutdale, and so I'm kind of a native Oregonian and feel pretty at home here. I want to tell you I'm very thankful for the work that you guys do. There's so much. I've seen just a slice of what you guys' life is like, and you work very hard, and I appreciate the hours you put in for us on our behalf. I appreciate you guys taking the time to listen to us, and I support you guys in your decisions. I appreciate that very, very much. I also want to thank you for being a strong partner with dentistry and with the Markham Hill overall for many, many years. We've really benefited from that, and I can see that every day as I look at the clinic that I'm able to practice in. Third year is first year. We go down to patient clinic, and we really just see our own patients all day long, and it's very rewarding to me. Upon entering dental school, I was expecting to be about 60, maybe 80,000 in debt on the way out. Now it looks like it's going to be about over 150, and believe it or not, I'm okay with that. You know, it's an investment in education. I see that now. The real difficulty is students coming in don't necessarily see that. And the value of education is very great for the state to invest into it. And we always appreciate the support that we have been given in the past for all the students here. I think we're very grateful for that, and that these houses of learning are available to us. And it's just benefited the community so much. If I had chosen at the time to go to another dental school because OHSU had been a little more expensive, say if I went to like North Carolina, I would have literally had to flown myself and three patients back to Oregon or a western state that participates in the RED, the Western Regional Examination Board, to be licensed to come back to Oregon. It's quite an effort to get back and move back and forth across the states. And we'd ask you to maintain your funding, your relationship with the Markham Hill, with the dental school. We are so grateful for the past and look forward to a strong future. These kind of things increase, these kind of expenditures of the state, the relationship increases the number of dentists in Oregon, and it increases thereby the number of rural dentists. It's very difficult to jump out into a rural area or underserved area when you have a large staggering debt. They tend to aggregate in the metropolitan areas. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Mahu Miyamoto, Linda Akagi, and Mark Brandon. Then next up after that will be Don, Cindy Dahl, and Justin Vander Neer.
I'm a native Oregonian, a second-year resident at the Providence Milwaukee Family Practice Residency, and an OHSU graduate in 2003. Seeking in for the rural health budget and the AHEC centers, recognizing that there's a shortage of both rural and underserved physicians in the state of Oregon. There's research from the American Academy of Family Physicians that basically shows that individuals that come from rural and underserved areas are more likely to return to those areas. There's also research that shows that strong experiences during their medical school training is going to impact their career choice. The Center for Rural Health supplies a basic pipeline programs for students, reaching 900 students a year to get them interested in going into the medical care. The challenge is that we have one of the highest in-state tuitions in the country, and that poses as an economical and psychological barrier for these students. So one of the things we have to rely on is that medical school experience, and I can attest to the impact that our rural health clerkship that we have during our third year. I was, prior to medical school, I had 16 years of higher education focusing on neuroscience, which I attained both master's and a PhD, and I attended medical school with the plan of going into neurology or neurosurgery. It was during my clerkship that markedly changed. I was went to John Day, Oregon, and had probably a life-changing experience where I got to work with, the medicine was great, but I got involved with the community and going to the Friday night football games, and to which I've also, it was fantastic. Set up a rotation for my residency so I could return there and plan on continuing to return there for my training, for my career. The key thing is funding for the Center of Health is going to help continue the pipeline of student interest into medicine in this state, and also provide the career-changing experiences that can affect me and has affected many of my fellow students. Thanks.
Thank you. Second call for Mizahu Miyamoto. Yeah, please come forward.
Good morning, and thank you for listening to us today. My name is Mizuho Miyamoto. I'm a medical student, and I'm here from Portland. And I just I wanted to emphasize to you how important it is to me, both in my plans as a future physician and right now as a medical student, to be able to work with underserved populations. And OHSU relies heavily on the state funding in order to be able to continue to provide that kind of care. It provides twice as much uncompensated care as the rest of the other hospitals in the state. And I think it's really important to be able to offer these services to people that can't afford insurance and to people that can't afford regular medical care. I'm speaking as somebody who hasn't had insurance in the past, and also as someone whose parents haven't always had insurance. And it's not because they're not working or they're not trying hard to provide for their family. It's because of other circumstances that you can't always, you know, job changes and things like that you can't always predict. And I think as a state, we have a responsibility to take care of those people that, you know, you're not going to see the people that don't have insurance coming here to talk to you today. And it's easy to take for granted the fact that you can just go see a doctor if you have chest pain, or if you're sick, that you can buy the medications and afford them. And I think health is one of those key things that if you invest in early on, you don't have to see the consequences of later on in the emergency room. It's something that's really important for you to think about, and I'd hope that you all consider that today when you're making your decisions. Thank you.
Don Cindy Dahl. And then also Justin Vanderneer and Melanie Vander Veen. Probably same. Yes. I just can't.
My name is Cindy Dahl, and this is my daughter, Dawn. We are from Sherwood. It is our pleasure to be here today to voice our opinion and to support CDRC at OHSU. My daughter, Dawn, has been a patient at CDRC for 27 years. She was sent to CDRC in 1978 when she was 7 months old by her pediatrician, Dr. Donald Palmer. He noted that she was not developing normally and did not have the answers. He sent her to the genetics clinic. We saw Dr. Ellen McGinnis at that time. As of today, Dawn is still being seen on a yearly basis with Dr. McGinnis. As you see, Dawn is still undiagnosed. Early in her progress, her father and I had not a clue on how to handle it. We didn't know what to expect, how to deal with anything. As a undiagnosis, there is no prognosis. We attended a program set up for other parents to cope with disabled children in a group session. It was a big help. We were not the only parents with a disabled child. We shared our opinions, our problems, our goals, and our hopes for the future with each of us with children with different disabilities. After much thinking at the doctor's part, it was determined that Dawn did have cerebral palsy, but nothing as to her growth delay. We are involved with physical therapy at CDRC once a week for years until she started school and received physical therapy at school. She went back to CDRC for physical exams, genetics exams, and eye exams. With the help of the dedicated people at CDRC, I have a very healthy but small daughter. She has received physical therapy twice a week at CDRC for the last 5 years and is involved in a clinical study on osteoporosis at OHSU. I beg of you to consider not cutting any funds but reinstating the funds for CDRC program in the future. Some of the cuts have happened in the past and hurt the availability for many patients to receive the proper care. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
My name is Justine Vanderveen. I have PKU and phenylketonuria, and I am only one of thousands of people who have this medical disorder. Thank you for hearing me today. OHSU has almost become another home for me, where I have nurses and doctors who care for me. This huge hospital in the state of Oregon helps and cares for many, many people, not just people who have PKU, but other problems too. I could not imagine not having OHSU and not having the right care I need. I have grown to be healthy. I go to Glencoe Elementary School in fourth grade at the age of 9. I was born July 17, 1995, with my parents understanding my needs. CDRC's Child Development and Rehabilitation Center, that is what I depend on. I go to get my help I need. I hope to grow up as healthy as I am now, and I am sure other kids want to also. OHSU has become a big part of my life and to many others. Without OHSU, I would not have wrote or read this to you today. So please think about what I've said and think about what you have been doing, and please support CDRC at OHSU. Thank you.
Good morning, Senator Devlin and the committee. For the record, my name is Melanie Vanderveen. I'm the mother of Justine. And we live in Portland with my husband, and she attends Portland Public Schools. I thank you for hearing us today, and we come to you with our support and concerns about these budget cuts that are going to happen at OHSU. Should these governor's recommendation be implemented, the Child Development Rehabilitation Center, CDRC, would be so affected by these cuts. Our family, as you heard Justine say, really depends on the treatment for her metabolic disorder. It's just one of many that is a state-mandated neonatal test done at birth to prevent brain damage in children. As you've heard Justine speak, you hear the voice of a well-rounded, educated 9-year-old girl that will grow to be healthy and productive and be a tax-paying citizen. 10 years ago, when she was born, the costs to the state for housing a person not treated with PKU ran into over $100,000 a year. I don't know what it would be today, but I'm sure it would be much more than that. Our family, if we had to travel outside of Oregon, it would be really a hardship financially and emotionally. We have chosen to stay home and take care of Justine so she can be a healthy, independent citizen without disabilities. We are committed, and of course, to follow through with this, raising her as a productive citizen. Without the support and the medical care at OHSU, Justine would not be able to speak to you today due to severe mental retardation. Neurological seizures would happen, and this is all due to unmetabolized phenylalanine accumulated to toxic blood levels. Brain damage is irreversible. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much. Becky Adelman, Bud Toon, and Christy Matthews. And then we will have
Paula Gabrud Howe, Beverly Johnson, and Daryl Lucky McClellan. Please proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Devlin, and members of this joint committee for hearing me today. My name is Becky Adelman, and I live currently in Portland, Oregon. I'm here as a mom. I'm here as a lifelong citizen of Oregon and a member of a large extended family who's been in the state very proudly for the last 150 years. We're original settlers in the southern part of the state. I'm really here to talk to you about my daughter and about how important CDRC has been to our family. My daughter isn't able to be here today, so I'd like to have the opportunity for you to meet her at least by photograph. The reason she's not here is because she is away attending college, and that's because of CDRC. She is a very healthy, happy, energetic, and capable young woman, and that's because of CDRC. She was born with a rare genetic and metabolic disorder called cystinosis. We had no clue for the first year of her life. We had no clue that my husband and I, and also our older son, who's now 23, are carriers of a recessive gene that causes this disorder. There was no history within our family of this disorder. We were told at the time that she would have kidney failure and a variety of other problems and probably need a transplant or pass away before she was 10. Obviously, that didn't happen. That was because of CDRC. I spoke with her on the phone last night, and I'll leave out some of the extra words like that she said, but she asked me a variety of questions, which I need to repeat to you today. Don't people know how important CDRC is to me and all the other kids that are like me? Does that mean that no one will be there when I come home to take care of me? Does that mean that I really can't come home to Oregon? So I hope that you will remember her picture and her questions. As you make these decisions, I think the answers lie within your hands. Please don't cut CDRC.
Thank you.
Why do I always have to follow the tough acts? My name is Bud Toon. I'm the executive director of United Cerebral Palsy, and we support in excess of 700 families a year. These are families who have children with cerebral palsy, and basically cerebral palsy is brain damage that occurs around the birthing process. CDRC has been a partner with many agencies, and years ago, when children were born with cerebral palsy, pediatricians would oftentimes say to the families, put your child in an institution and forget them. Well, as you know, we closed our state institution in 2000, and Fairview no longer exists. For us, CDRC is a partner with United Cerebral Palsy, with the ARC, with many other organizations that serve people with developmental disabilities. Families in the state of Oregon would have no options. If we've taken away Fairview, and there are precious few resources to be supporting families, CDRC is the lone group, medically speaking in particular, that will support families who have children with these disabilities. And so it will, as you've heard, force families to be looking for resources outside of the state of Oregon. So as an organization that advocates on behalf of families who have children with developmental disabilities and cerebral palsy in particular, we ask you to restore these cuts, continue the partnership that we have with these families, and create an opportunity for them to keep their children at home. Thank you.
My
My name is Christy Mattis, and this is my son, Jaya. He's 10 months old. He was born with spina bifida, as well as a more rare birth defect known as sacral agenesis, which means his spine did not completely form. He's missing, like, the lower third of his spine. There's only one other case that I know of in the entire state with this birth defect. We attend the CDRC for his care. We see we can see many of the doctors in one day, up to 8 doctors in one day, instead of traveling around all the different doctors. And he needs intense physical therapy on a weekly basis because he has extremely stiff joints. Without this physical therapy, he wouldn't be able to sit. You know, his hips are stiff, his knees, his feet. He wouldn't be able to even move his lower extremities. And also he has a shunt for the hydrocephalus due to the spina bifida. The regular pediatricians and even ER doctors don't have the experience to recognize the problems with these. He's already had one instance where the pediatrician missed the sign of the shunt failure and the CDRC picked it up, and it can be life-threatening if it's not caught in time. And we've had other cases. He's only 10 months old, and several times we've already had cases where his regular pediatrician or ER doctors do not recognize the problems that these kids have and don't treat them properly. And the CDR, there's no other place for us to go. The CDRC is the only place we can receive this care. So it's very important to us to have that kind of care. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Paula Gabrod Howe, Beverly Johnson, and Daryl Lucky McClellan. And I know you have a fourth member of your group if they'd like to come up. Chris Tipperary also.
Good morning. My name is Beryl McClellan Lucky, and I'm an associate professor of nursing at Umpqua Community College. The Umpqua Community College is the only source of an associate degree program in the rural setting of Douglas County. And as part of our program, we strongly support lifelong learning in our students. 50% of our graduating students plan to continue to pursue their BSN degree immediately following the graduation from our program. The remaining 50% plan to pursue that degree at some point in the future. The only BSN program in the state of Oregon is through OHSU. On the other side of nursing education, especially at the community college, are those of us who have master's degrees in nursing. The only program in the state of Oregon that offers a master's degree in nursing is OHSU. So if the health care of the state of Oregon is dependent upon the production of qualified nurses to provide health care in the state of Oregon, not only do we need the associate degree programs, but we also need those individuals who are interested in pursuing a master's degree level of education in order to provide services and teaching opportunities for those students. So I would strongly urge you to consider the cuts that have been proposed in restoring those to support the education of health care for the citizens in Oregon. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Paula Gubrud Howe, and I'm the Dean of Allied Health at Mount Hood Community College in Gresham. As a community college educator, I strongly urge lawmakers to restore funding to the OHSU School of Nursing. In Oregon, 9 community colleges in partnership with OHSU have created the Oregon Consortium for Nursing Education. Through this consortium, students will complete either an associate degree or a baccalaureate degree in nursing on any of the 9 community college campuses. This program is a model for higher education in Oregon and will allow students to obtain a baccalaureate degree in nursing throughout the state. community college students throughout Oregon have developed their educational plans that include articulating to the OHSU School of Nursing to complete their baccalaureate degree in nursing. For students in the rural part of the state, access to OHSU School of Nursing upper division courses provide the only avenue for earning a higher degree in nursing. In many instances, we need more baccalaureate program or nurses in rural Oregon because the care needs are more complex. Nursing students in urban Oregon are also dependent on access to OHSU courses. While private nursing programs do exist, the cost for such education is prohibitive for many students, especially community college students. Increasing OHSU nursing tuition will make nursing education out of reach for many Oregonians, and this is especially true for underrepresented groups who are badly needed in healthcare environments to assure patients receive culturally appropriate care. The primary barrier for minority students are often financial concerns, and inadequately funding OHSU School of Nursing will significantly reduce access for minority populations. Oregon's nurse educators continue to move forward with a very unified, pioneering spirit, knowing that the health of Oregonians is dependent on access to quality baccalaureate education throughout the state. Please support our efforts by restoring funding to OHSU School of Nursing.
Hi, my name is Chris Tippery, and I'm a second-year nursing student at Mount Hood Community College, and I also represent many community college students. When returning to school 3 years ago, my educational plan included attending a community college and then going on to OHSU to finish my bachelor's degree, because this is the only really financial feasible way for me to complete my education and go forward. My career goals include being a teacher, working in the community, and being an advanced practice nurse. And I can only do this with a bachelor's degree, and only with a bachelor's degree can I go on and get a master's degree. Increasing tuition at OHSU will not allow me to reach these goals, as well as many other students who, like me, have returned to school later in life or are financially need the financial assistance. I hope that you will return funding to OHSU because it is a unique opportunity for many nursing students. Nurses are not only in our hospitals and our clinics, but nurses are also what we like to call neighborhood nurses. We're all around. We learn skills of empathy, and being a nurse is great for the community and our neighborhoods in general. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Beverly Johnson. I'm an associate professor at Umpqua Community College in Roseburg. I'd like to thank you for allowing me to talk today in support of OHSU School of Nursing and continued support for their funding. I am also a graduate of OHSU School of Nursing from La Grande, Oregon. And I don't know about all of you, but I'm sure you're probably aware of the nursing shortage that has reached our country and the state of Oregon. And as I get older, the idea of having quality nursing care becomes more and more important to me. I would like to have a quality registered nurse available at my bedside if I need that in the future. In order to do that, we need more nurses. But OHSU does not only produce nurses, they also are a support system for those of us who are in nursing education. In order to teach in nursing programs, you need to have a master's degree. We have a shortage of master's prepared nurses. We cannot turn out quality nurses if we don't have the nurse educators to teach them. We need quality nurse educators. When we enter the nursing program to teach, very few of us have a background in teaching. We're nurses. We may do patient education, but we're not teachers. So it's important for us to have support. At our college, we've had 5 out of 6 nursing instructors retire over the last 2 years. I have been there 3 years now. After 1 year, I was one of the senior faculty members. That's kind of scary. OHSU has stepped in and provided support for us. They have shared their resources, shared their faculty. They have provided training. They have been a part, instrumental in the Oregon Consortium of Nurse Educators. They make their faculty available to us. Dr. Tanner, Dr. Lassiter have provided us with tools to help evaluate our students, innovative teaching methods. We must have their support for all of the colleges in the state of Oregon to produce quality nurses. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Sherry Stapler. Lene Ellerington, and Jennifer Jones. And then next up after that will be Steve Adams, Amy Thomas, and Dan Garreau.
Hi, my name is Sherry Stapler. I found it early in my second pregnancy that I would be born with a child with special needs. I had never encountered many children or people with special needs before, so I knew it would be a tough journey. This is my son, Aiden. I was immediately sent to a few specialists for Aiden and me. I didn't know what impact these people would have on our lives. We currently attend OHSU's Child Development and Rehab Center for Spina Bifida Clinic biannually. Fortunately for my family, we are able to see most of our specialists at that time in one clinic setting. It would be very difficult for us to run to five or six different doctor's offices just to get one checkup for Aiden. It has been great to have the opportunity to receive services as this, to provide information to better take care of Aiden, and to see his progress in daily living. He also receives help with getting his durable medical equipment, which we would not be able to afford without me having to call around and try to work out all the details with the insurance company and doctor's offices and be able to let them go through that for me. This is going to be quite a life journey for Aiden, and I want him to have the best that Oregon has for him with the resource of OHSU and CDRC. Please help keep it going for Aiden's sake and the sake of other families with children with special needs who use these services. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Jennifer Jones. I am a behavioral therapist for children with autism. I'm a wife. I am a volunteer in the community, a voter, a taxpayer, and I have PKU. PKU, as you've already heard, is a rare metabolic disorder that, when left untreated, leads to profound mental retardation and neurological disorders. Oregon Health Science University, CDRC, is the only hospital in the state of Oregon which treats PKU through their metabolic clinic. That's the Child Development Center. So I still go to the Child Development Center, much like I believe it was Tyler was mentioning early. No other doctors or even HMOs in this state treat it. They send everyone to OHSU, whether you're born or 50. If the metabolic clinic at the CDRC suffers the proposed cuts, I and many others in the state are in very serious danger. As I mentioned before, I am a therapist, wife, volunteer, voter, and taxpayer. Without treatment, I will most likely lose the ability to do all these things and end up costing the state money, more money, due to becoming either disabled, mentally ill, hospitalized, institutionalized, or the mother of a baby with severe birth defects. Some or all of the before mentioned are very real situations which I and this state will find ourselves facing if those of us with PKU are not properly treated. Because the CDRC is the only clinic treating the very rare PKU, most other doctors have only heard of PKU and have no idea how to properly treat it. Every doctor I have had has asked me to explain PKU to them. One doctor even required me to get a test because he believed if I had PKU, I should be mentally retarded. OHSU CDRC has provided me with the most excellent care so that I've been able to control the diet in ways that allows me to have a normal mental and neurological ability and function, not to mention live a full and meaningful life. I beg you, please, do not cut funding for this program. The alternative would be me in an institution, and I'm not, and I'm very thankful for that. So please, please do not cut it. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Lene Elkington. I'm president of the Oregon chapter of Prader-Willi Syndrome Association. I'm a mom. I have three children. My oldest son has autism. My middle daughter is severely normal. And my last child has Prader-Willi Syndrome, and that's what I'm going to talk about today. As quickly as I can. Our daughter Megan was born a floppy baby. She could not cry. She had no ability to turn her head, cough, or clear her airway. and her right arm was paralyzed. She was life-flighted from our state to a neonatal intensive care unit. We were told she had a type of muscular dystrophy that would kill her within the first year. When we arrived at the NICU, we were told she was severely multiply handicapped and would never cry, turn over, or speak. Megan was diagnosed with 5 different diagnoses. At the age of 4, we took her to a genetics clinic where a geneticist was 99% sure she had Prader-Willi syndrome. A genetic test was done, and she did not have the deletion in the chromosome 15. At that time, we moved to Oregon and were referred to the Child Development and Rehabilitation Clinic at OHSU. There, we met a wonderful geneticist, Dr. Ellen McGinnis. The clinic redid the deletion test and still found no deletion, but Dr. McGinnis was sure Meg had Prader-Willi, and more testing was done. A newly devised test that could see small enough to find that the human genome could transmutate or change and become as close to the missing 15 as possible. In doing this, Megan developed Prader-Willi syndrome. There are 5 ways to get Prader-Willi syndrome. What is it? Extreme food-seeking behaviors. All food must be locked away from them. They have a low metabolism, 800 to 1,000 calories per day, or they will gain weight. Speech is affected. They are usually mildly retarded. They have a high pain tolerance. They are verbally captivating, and I can attest to that. They develop scoliosis. They have an inability to absorb calcium and can develop osteoporosis by the age of 19. Hypothermia is also a problem with some of them. In a normal temperature, they can have hypothermia, their temperature drop, and their heart will stop, and they will die. They have temporal bursts, obsessive compulsive disorder, skin picking, low muscle tone, and an inability to feel full. They can eat until their stomach perforates. The hypothalamus in the brain is formed incorrectly, and they do not mature physically. When you have a child with PWS, it's absolutely necessary to have Children's Development and Rehabilitation Center. At these clinics, we can see the geneticist, neurologist, endocrinologist, we can see the nutritionist, the gastroenterologist, occupational physical therapy, and other family supports. With PWS, we may be able to see several doctors in one day at these clinics. Because PWS is very complicated, without these clinics and the dedicated specialists, our children could die. You may think we could go to any doctor. To this day, 21 years later, when we take Megan to a new doc or emergency room doc or the paramedics have to come, I end up educating them about PWS. With this cut, we will lose our clinic, and not just PWS, but also spina bifida, autism, and other clinics. A cut like this, one of our only sources of treatment and information, can mean life or death for our children. It has been said a civilization is judged by how it treats its weakest citizens. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you all. Steve Adams, Amy Thomas, and Dan Garreau.
Good morning. My name is Steve Adams. I'm the father of Hudson Adams. He's almost 4. He has PKU. Looking at him, you would never know. He's almost 50 pounds. Enjoys football. He's as rough as any kid you could ever imagine. But that he wouldn't be like that if we didn't have the CDRC. He would be severely mental retarded. His tolerance level to protein is extremely low. He can't have hardly any protein. If he takes any protein in, it has to be with under 2 grams of protein per day. That's 5 tater tots is 1 gram of protein. imagine eating, that's all you can have for protein. That's it. With the CDRC and the clinic visits that we get, it's very reassuring to know that there's stuff out there that he can have, that they have in their food room, that we can purchase and get from them and have his formula. He'll have his formula for life. But without that stuff, it would be a tragic thing in our family. I mean, I got two daughters that they're great. They're healthy, and it's amazing what that place will do. I don't know if you guys have ever been up there and seen it, but the work they do is awesome. Thank you.
My name is Amy Thomas, and I'm a member of the Oregon affiliate of the Children's Tumor Foundation because my husband, David, has a genetic disorder called neurofibromatosis, or NF. As a child, David did not speak until he was 4 years old. He was teased as a child for his speech and the tumors he had on his skin. He was no stranger to hospital stays and surgery. Learning disabilities and bone abnormalities are more common for children with NF, and my husband had both. Today, my husband can talk, walk, and work and pass as quote-unquote normal. He still has medical issues to deal with, including a recent femur fracture that likely wouldn't have happened at his age had he not had the NF-related propensity for bone abnormality. But I think he copes better than I do, and I know it's because of the therapy, education, and support he has received. David and I faithfully go to the NF support group, and a Child Development and Rehabilitation Center genetics counselor also faithfully attends. The CDRC's impact to us alone has been great, but we see all the children in our group and can't imagine not having the CDRC for them. One of the children in our group has a tumor in her throat and she's receiving chemotherapy. Another does not know how long she will be able to see because of a tumor on the optic nerve. Most of the children have learning disabilities and speech deficits. These children are Oregon's future. I love our state, and I believe in our capacity to invest in our children. Let's save financial resources by helping them now, by keeping the Child Development and Rehabilitation Center. Thank you.
Hi, good morning. My name is Dan Garreau, and I'm a 28-year-old student. And as a broke student, let me firstly say that I appreciate the zero-sum game that you guys are playing here. However, when I first saw the proposed budget cuts, I laughed. And I thought, they just don't understand. And then I cried long, slow tears for the future of this state, because that came from a point of view as a student who is actively involved in the community, and I'm seeing how OHSU infuses our community with professionals in a variety of multidiscipline areas that just they're the multifaceted nature of OHSU and its unique combination of interdisciplinary productions in the form of people that go out there and touch other people's lives is incredible. And that's just from the point of view as a student. From the point of view as the student body president for 2 years, I can testify that no issue has mobilized students like this issue has, because they see what's going on. The personal stories that they've told me, because I've gone out and talked to them, are ones of access to education. These are very bright Oregonian students. I've heard the stories of them, and they tell me, and they're just really inspiring. And this education for them, this opportunity, it's a nucleation site. It's like these budget cuts are stamping out the stem cells of our future health in this state. It's incredible. So to conclude, I just want to maybe mention a specific story. In my spare time, I mentor high school students, and one of the kids that I mentor was lucky enough to win the International Science and Engineering Fair, first place in engineering. So this is an Oregonian who is technically the brightest mind in the world in engineering, who will not attend OHSU because his family can't afford it. The end.
Thank you very much. Mr. Card, someone signed you up again. You're not planning to testify again, are you? Randall Fryer, Ann Bedney, and Alan looks like McGrood, or Meneg. And after that, we will have Maria Bateman, Molly Skason, and Harvey Matthews. Okay. Could someone go and see if they're there? And please proceed.
My name is Alan Murug, and I'd like to thank you all for the time that you've given us and to everyone here. I'm here on behalf of a gal named Jean. Jean's the president of the Oregon affiliate of the Children's Tumor Foundation, and I'll read her testimony. It was 35 years ago when my husband and I learned that our sweet, lively 2-year-old daughter had just been diagnosed with neurofibromatosis, and that is a condition we had never heard of and we couldn't even pronounce, and we can testify to that too, as we have a 2-year-old that has neurofibromatosis. As we learned about this disease, we were devastated. Allow me to tell you why briefly, as this testimony is about funding for the Children's Development and Rehabilitation Clinic. Neurofibromatosis, or NF as it is often referred to, is the term for two distinct genetic disorders, NF1 and NF2. The hallmark of NF1 is tumors that grow on nerves anywhere on or in the body. NF1 may lead to blindness, deafness, brain and spinal tumors, severe disfigurements, bone abnormalities, and developmental delays and learning disabilities. NF2 causes bilateral auditory tumors, brain and spinal tumors, and cataracts. NF is a common disorder. It affects both sexes, all races, and ethnic groups equally. 1 in 4,000 babies is born with NF. You can certainly see why we panicked that day 35 years ago. We were handed a piece of paper with the word CDRC, Genetics Clinic, written on it. To make a long story short, we were connected immediately to a genetic counselor. I'll end there. This is a little too long, but I'd just like to state also that our son is 2 years old, and he does have NF, and we're not looking for this for the state as a handout. I don't think a lot of these people are. They're not coming to you with those issues. We would just like, I would like to know, as a working father, that if that help is available, that he, you know, I'll work and support and take care of him all my life. I'll do that. I just want to know if there's help available that he might be able to access that. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Fryer and Ms. Bedney. And then we will have Maria Bateman, Molly Skason, and Harvey Matthews.
I'm Randall Fryer, and I sit here in front of you as the father of a child with PKU who's doing great. And to give you a little respect for what the clinic does, this is James's full day capability to have protein, and it is a non-altered potato. So at the end of this potato, I have to search for absolutely protein-free foods, and I can't do that at the corner market. If there's a question in your minds as to why these families are turning out in such numbers. The other way I sit here is as a licensed physician. And I'll tell you that if this service doesn't exist in this state, I don't want to practice here. I don't want the added malpractice. I don't know how to take care of these people. They're right when they sit here and tell you, you know, the doctor has to ask you, well, what is it? It's true. I can't do it. And if there's not a referral center, I just can't imagine staying. I know that I will, because I know we'll create a referral center somewhere. But if you're going to cut this fund, for God's sake, make it with a bridge. Make the services not go away. Thanks. You guys you have a tough job.
Hi, my name is Ann Bedney, and I'm the proud mother to Evan, who sits here today, a typical 4-year-old, rambunctious and learning ABCs, preschooler, and who also has PKU.
what you've heard about today, which is a rare metabolic disease, which was detected at birth through a blood test. And I attribute Evan's health and well-being to the care that we've had at OHSU. Evan is restricted from eating most things in a grocery store besides fruit and vegetables. If you can imagine, no tofu, no meat, no dairy, no anything. And just wondering, I would not know how to feed my son or take care of him in the way that they do at CDRC. They know what to look for in lab results. They know how to direct me to ensure his proper growth. We've even had physicians in the past, practitioners that are appalled that my son cannot eat meat, and they do not have the capabilities or the knowledge that they do at CDRC. We're also given the wonderful benefit of getting his specialized medical foods from OHSU. And these are foods that save me hours of time from vendors and tons of money from paying forward for his foods that OHSU bills our insurance for. I'm a single parent, and there's no way I could fork up the, I think it was $15,000 a year that I could for his food. I just cannot do it. And I'm devastated to hear about these cuts. Evan's potential relies on CDRC and help. And without that, I do not know what we would do. So whatever in your powers, please ensure that his potential for tomorrow is preserved. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Maria Bateman, Molly Skason, and Harvey Matthews. And then our final panel after that will be Jared Broadfoot, Lauren Rose, and Amy Anton.
Hi, my name is Maria Bateman. My daughter, Lillian, has spina bifida. I'm a mother of four, and we've lived in Salem for a year and a half. At the time we found out about Lillian's birth defect, my husband was in his very first semester in dental school at OHSU. We had no family here, and we felt completely alone. After finding out about her spina bifida, the CDRC Spina Bifida Clinic called us and made an appointment for us to get informed about spina bifida and our child. After she was born, we were encircled by specialists willing to care for our darling daughter and falling in love with her in the process. The doctors and therapists in the clinic became trusted professionals to us, but even more important, they have become trusted friends. Having a child with spina bifida is in itself very overwhelming. Spina bifida can affect the body from the top of the head all the way down to the toes, so we must see many different specialists. Lillian has a neurosurgeon, a urologist, physical therapist, an orthopedic surgeon, and has used a feeding specialist. We are able to see each of these professionals in one day at the spina bifida clinic. We are assigned a room, and the doctors and therapists come in one by one and examine and evaluate Lillian. As we are waiting, we play with Barbies or color or play with My Little Ponies that we have brought from home. Each professional consults with me and also compares his observation with those of the other specialists. It's an ideal situation to get the best care for a person with spina bifida. I can recall one specific occasion where I stood with brilliant minds and put our heads together discussing a possible surgery for my daughter, and they valued my opinion. As a mother, this is invaluable. I know my concerns will be addressed on every issue. Lillian has had 14 surgeries. The hospital is not an exciting place for her to be. If we can go there in one day and see all of her specialists, it is very, very, it's beneficial to her. To not have the spina bifida clinic is frightening to me. I would feel alone. The only reason we are here in Oregon, my husband graduated from dental school. He did a residency in Texas, and we compared programs. We came back to Oregon because of the spina bifida clinic. He has a dental practice here in Salem.
we just paid our taxes. The first time we've paid taxes, and it wasn't very fun. But we are in Oregon because of OHSU and the Spina Bifida Clinic, and also he received a superior education at the School of Dentistry at OHSU. Please keep the funding for this program. It's the reason why we are here. Thank you.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Good morning. My name is Molly Skason, and I'm here to urge you to support Senate Bill 5522. OHSU and the CDRC have had a major impact on my life. They were my first caregivers when me and my twin sister were born a month premature and weighing barely more than a pound each 25 years ago. And their technology and expertise allowed us to come home healthy with a great start in life after only 5 weeks of neonatal care. In addition, the Craniofacial Disorders Clinic has provided me in my adolescence with years of orthodonture and oral surgery that my family would have no way of paying for on their own. This started with a palate spreader when I was 12 and proceeded on to braces, wisdom tooth removal, and an oral surgery when I was 17. This, of course, was a fairly major procedure that my family would have no way of undertaking on their own. But the clinic made everything easy for us. I was able to get dental care in Salem, and they connected us with an oral surgeon in Portland. My condition, I can't tell you what the technical term for it is, but I can tell you that I had a massive underbite and my jaws were completely misaligned, leaving me with very little natural ability to chew. So not only did they give me a cosmetically wonderful smile, but they also greatly increased my quality of life. So I would like to urge you to maintain these programs so that children who have problems similar to what I've experienced are able to get this kind of care.
Thank you very much. Mr. Matthews.
Thank you, Chairman Devlin, members of the committee. My name is Harvey Matthews with Associated Oregon Industries. We are the state's largest business association with over 23,000 members. You've heard many personal stories here today. AOI also has several personal stories. Richard Buttrick, who has the written testimony that I'll read into the record here, is out today because of a family medical condition, and he will be going to OHSU for a second opinion on that as well. Both Julie Brandis and I, who you all know, have had our children taken care of there at OHSU, and the late Donna Lewis, who worked at AOI, was given an extra year of life. We're all affected by OHSU in many ways. But I want to talk today about the economic development story that OHSU has. By keeping OHSU financially healthy, you're going to continue to create many jobs and provide a lot of economic development for our state. OHSU currently has over 11,500 employees, which is Portland's largest workforce. They are providing for over 5,000 construction jobs generated by OHSU's expansion of three new buildings at Markham Hill and its South Waterfront. As there were $27 million in gifts, grants, and contracts and service funds, or $27 for every $1 state puts in, and several other important statistics there, which Steve's yellow card will not allow me to continue on with. But I'll trust you'll read it yourself. OHSU benefits the entire Oregon economy through its services, jobs, research, investment, commercialization, and development. Whether it's the life of one child served by Dornbecker or the medical or one medical invention, Oregon's future is linked to OHSU's continued success. Thank you for your time.
Jared Broadfoot, Lauren Rose, Amy Anton, and I apologize, those are the last people that we're going to be able to hear testimony from.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Jared Broadfoot here today representing the Oregon State Building and Construction Trades Council. Keep my testimony brief. You guys have heard a lot of compelling testimony today. But wanted to come today to explain to you that OHSU is the single largest employer the building trades has in this state, with right around 5,500 construction jobs out of new expansions, like Harvey had mentioned, on the Markham Hill and South Waterfront. OHSU has kept the construction industry alive. We, very short time ago, were looking at 30 to 40% unemployment at our locals. And through OHSU's expansion, and the only way they're able to do these expansions is if they're funded and if they're healthy. And we're here to lend our support to restore their budget, because it means jobs for our folks in real terms. So to lend that support, we're here today. Building Trades is very supportive, obviously, because we have a lot of jobs that spur the economy through the expansion. So I'd be happy to answer any questions, and want to close with that.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Devlin, members of the committee. My name is Lauren Rose. I'm currently a fourth-year medical student. I'll graduate this June and then begin a residency in pediatrics at OHSU as well. So obviously you can imagine this topic is particularly important to me, as well as the rest of the students who couldn't be here to speak today. I'm here to talk about the kind of impact the proposed cuts in OHSU funding would have on students like myself. My mother's parents were Mexican immigrants. My grandmother cried when I was accepted to medical school because I was fulfilling our family's American dream. As one of the very few college graduates in my family, I understand the value of higher education to families like mine. To achieve my dream, I accepted almost $200,000 in debt from student loans, which is not unusual for students in my class. And you can imagine, if the cuts go through for OHSU spending, this number would only raise for future classes. I'm in this profession because I love it, not because I want to make money. But as you can imagine, the reality of paying back my loans will be a significant burden for me and my future family for the majority of my career. I have a significant interest in caring for underserved and indigent patients, largely because of my experience of taking care of so many of these patients at OHSU in my training. Yet, the amount of money I'm in debt certainly makes me question such a career, especially considering that as a woman who wants to have children someday, I may work for less than full-time at some point. I know friends of mine who have opted out of careers in primary care largely due to this burden. Really, what I wanted to say, though, too, is something that you may not realize. Because Oregon has only one medical school that accepts a large proportion of out-of-state students, largely due to past funding cuts, it's actually already very difficult for Oregonians to achieve their dream of becoming a doctor. This will only compound the situation. We'll have a situation in the future where not only is it extremely difficult to get in, but it's already a long and arduous career path, and that now it's going to be extraordinarily expensive. Will students continue to choose this? Certainly we'll be creating a disincentive for graduates to enter primary care fields. Also, I'm concerned because if the tuition is raised, we no longer have the incentive for Oregonians to stay here in Oregon and go to school. And these are the people that are most likely to stay here and train throughout their career and become doctors and take care of the indigent patients, the rural patients, and all of Oregonians. In summary, I think the proposed budget cuts for OHSU would result in the training of fewer doctors who want to stay and work in Oregon, and more specifically work in primary care or with indigent patients. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you for allowing us to come and speak. I just wanted to also address that there's many students up on campus who are very concerned that unfortunately couldn't make it today due to a class schedule or working in the clinics. I have the same concerns as Lauren, but I basically wanted to address how this will change and cut in the... Amy Anton, excuse me, I'm sorry. I'm a first-year medical student at the OHSU. I just wanted to address not only how this will affect medical students, but healthcare in general. We are people that are wanting to help and stay in the state, helping others, caring for others. By increasing the tuition, you'll create basically a private university where in-state students will also pay the same as out-of-state. Having recently gone through the application process of getting into medical school, one of your main concerns is what you will be paying in terms of loans. By increasing tuition by $10,000 per year, you will be effectively changing the choices for students in Oregon. They will no longer be looking to OHSU as their main choice because of the increase in tuition. They will be starting to look outside of the state. And as they move outside of the state, they will continue to stay outside. It's harder to come back into Oregon going to a medical school outside. By doing this, you'll effectively decrease the amount of physicians at an already
low an already decreased amount of physicians in the rural environment, it will be a huge change for Oregon. We won't see the amount of care that we have now. Thank you.
Thank you very much. On behalf of the committee, I'd like to thank everyone for being here today to testify on OHSU's budget. We will go into phase two consideration of OHSU's budget tomorrow. On Thursday, we will not be meeting, but we will return to OHSU's budget for phase two deliberations on Monday. My committee here has listened to a great deal of testimony. I would like to acknowledge that many members of the committee here were at a hearing last night until 9:30 here. My committee today will be going to Lake Ridge High School in Lake Oswego and will be in a hearing until 9:30 p.m. this evening, and also many of them will be going to Tillamook tomorrow for a hearing in the evening. So we've heard a great deal of testimony. We really appreciate you all coming out. And with that, I will close this hearing, and we will see you. I will see the committee tonight. Plus, we're going to be joined by about 11 or 12 of our colleagues from the House and Senate. And with that, I'll close the hearing on SB 5522 and close this meeting.